It's Bob McCallum, John Shannon, and as you probably can imagine, the two of us have very few friends, and so.
We have no friends, Bob.
So it's rare when we get a friend to come on the program. And we always haven't been friendly. Well, I haven't always been friendly with him. I've been in more arguments with this guy than anybody I know. And I would imagine you've had the odd tiff with him too over the years.
I think that not for for public consumption, but I think in the last few years that we were all together, we created quite a solid bond of friendship. So it's
I had to climb a few mountains and drag him through a few rivers to get there. But
yeah, but you'd yell at him and you'd call him thing too.
I did. Yeah. Scott Moore is now the president of Uninterrupted Canada and the former head honcho at Sportsnet
and CBC Sports
and CBC Sports before that. Yeah. And was at TSN before that, just to put all the credits in line. Yeah. And I'm probably missing a few things, but
yeah, he couldn't keep a job.
So. Well, there was that, I suppose. although that could be said for both of us.
Yes.
And more accurately, perhaps, than with Mr. Moore, at least recently. In any event, Moore scribbled something about the future of broadcasting in the broadest sense of the word. And it caught our attention. And so we asked him to come on, and he has agreed. And so we'll talk about sports broadcasting and where it goes. Scott Moore will join us when we continue after these messages. McCallum Shannon back with you. Hope you're enjoying your day or your evening, or whenever the hell you're listening or watching this. We're with a buddy, a chum, a pal, a former boss of ours, so to speak. He was the former head honcho at Sportsnet, and now the president of Uninterrupted. Scott Moore is with us. And
Uninterrupted Canada, come on! Don't you want to give him a bigger job than he's got? You know?
Yeah. All right. Well, fine.
People's noses will be out of joint, Bob.
Yep. Well, just Canada. Although I am in the United States at the moment, I'm in California, and I picked this background, Bob. I'm in La Quinta, looking out at the Arnold Palmer course. I thought this would piss you off. So normally I do my Zoom meetings in my office, but I was allowed to do it.
Well, hey, Scotty, how would we know the difference if he's pissed off or not?
That's true.
Well, you have success. I'm envious as crap. Have you had COVID? Have you had COVID yet?
No. We've been very lucky. We had a big family Christmas in Muskoka and everybody was safe. But we were thinking of coming down to California, and I'm watching a Raptors game with nobody in the stands. And then I'm watching a bowl game and NFL games with the places jammed. And I said to Becky, I don't know who's right, but I know who's having more fun. So let's go to our place in California.
Well, I don't wish you COVID, but it would serve you right.
Have you've been healthy, Bob? You've managed to stay.
I've had my shots, you know, like the pet. Mm-hmm. And I got a little ill a couple of weeks ago, a little head cold but it lasted a couple of weeks. And maybe I did, maybe I had it, maybe I didn't. I don't, you know, it's one of those with this new strain that's going around. It's relatively mild by comparison to what we were hearing, you know, with the initial stages. So I honestly don't know. I actually hope I did have it, because then my immune system has been tweaked again.
Yeah, well, the good news is for 99.8% of the population, this new strain is going to be relatively minor, but you still have to be careful, especially if you've got elderly parents. I have a friend who, unfortunately, his elderly grandmother caught it and was gone very quickly. And so we're very careful around my parents, who are in their late 80s, but they're not here in California with us. So for the next 2 months, we'll be able to go out for dinner, play golf, do all the things. But I'm happy to report that down here in October, very few people were wearing masks. And now I would say 90% of people are wearing masks inside, which is impressive. So there you go.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but you're referring to the elderly being at high risk. Guess what? You got a mirror nearby?
Yeah.
You're talking to two guys and you yourself, Moore, who you may be a few years younger, but you know, I don't know that we don't qualify as elderly anymore.
Where did the time go? I remember walking into the TSN newsroom in 1984 before the network went on the air, and there was a redheaded Scott Moore running around like a jackrabbit, just excited to be in the business.
That's right.
Right? Right?
Where did the time go? Where did the hair go?
Well, Bob's hasn't changed.
Yeah, Bob's is still very good.
Well, it's a little grayer than it was, but I mean, I still have a lot. I may not have anything between in the space between my hair or under my hair, but this was Shannon's idea to get in touch with you because he saw that you had posted something that kind of tweaked our interest. And that's sort of what we wanted to talk about. And you'll correct me, I know, if I'm misrepresenting this, but you suggested that maybe we are too focused on what we consider the core major sports and that there are other things that perhaps we should be taking a closer look at, spending more time with. There's a new generation of people in our country and in the United States as well, and people who historically don't have the ties to Canada and bring new things with them. How am I doing, first of all? Is that more or less
pretty good? Pretty good. I think I look at it sort of in a macro way and how Canada has changed and continues to change from, you know, 20, 30 years ago to now, when, you know, the multicultural policy of Pierre Elliott Trudeau really came in and encouraged more immigration, and Canada became more and more and more and more diverse, which is, I think everybody considers a great thing. And if you look at the growth of the economy and the growth of the population in Canada, we've committed as a country to bringing in 500,000 new Canadians every year. And that's where all the growth in the economy is coming from. If you took just the organic growth in the current population, we'd be shrinking. So, you know, the growth in the economy, the growth in the population is coming from outside Canada. And where those people are coming from is different than what it was 75 years ago. It's not Western Europeans as much. It's people from Asia. It's people from all parts of the world that maybe bringing a different sports fandom to the table. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing is way more interest in soccer, way more interest in basketball, way more interest in sports that are endemic to those other countries. And, you know, we need as an industry to be aware of where the big growth is. And I hearken back and, you know, one of the things that an old boss of mine said, Nadir Muhammad, who used to run Rogers, is it takes a long time for things to change and then they change suddenly. And I think we're at that point that, you know, even 10 years ago, John, most NHL clubs had no multicultural marketing strategy. Now, if hockey is going to become and remain relevant, they need to bring more people into the tent, because people who have come from Africa or parts of Eastern Europe, their number one sport is going to be soccer and maybe basketball. The guy I played golf with on Sunday, Tim Lewicki, who you guys know, he said to me 10 years ago, maybe when he first came to Canada, he said, Scott, basketball is going to outstrip hockey in popularity in Canada before you know it. And, you know, apples to apples, Raptors in NBA are really, you know, I can remember doing rights deals with the Raptors when I was at CBC in 2007 for $0 because they literally couldn't give the product away. Now that property is, may not be on par from a financial value standpoint to hockey, but it's awfully darn close. So things are changing, and you know, I'm particularly big on soccer. What happened with the Canadian men's national team and the Canadian women's national team over the last few months and years, you know, that sport has totally changed. The women winning the Olympic gold medal, Alphonso Davies' goal against Panama went wildly viral, and Canada will play in the next two men's World Cups, and that hasn't happened since 1986. So as Nadir said, it takes a long time to change, and then they change quickly, and I think we're in that changing quickly phase.
But okay, so I don't disagree with you, but when you wrote the it was on Scott's Twitter feed, by the way, folks, when you did put it out there, I thought, wow, I wonder if the president of Sportsnet would feel this way. It's easy to do from the seat you're in today, yep. But you still need to generate revenue. You still need to find a way to generate ratings. And so at what point, put the old hat on, at what point would you have to say, okay, we are going to sacrifice something for the future? And do you have to sacrifice something for the future?
I don't know that I would use the word sacrifice. I would use the word investment.
No, I'm actually thinking from a programming perspective more than anything, Scott, in that we know you want to invest in the new sports. We know we want to invest in others other than the big four. Okay. If we want to call it the big four or the big three in our country, I don't care what you want to call it, but you know, there's only, even though you had five channels, there's only limited airtime.
Yeah, I would argue that with five channels, there's more airtime than
you know what to do with.
Yeah, but let me give you this example. 4 or 5 years ago, the men's national soccer team had to pay to get on the air. They couldn't get people to carry their games unless they paid. The last round or the current round of men's qualifying that we did, I work with Canada Soccer a little bit, that we helped them get a deal with Sportsnet. Their games are drawing 1 million, 1.2, 1.3 million. Those are Hockey Night in Canada numbers. So you're telling me that there's not value there. And if you look at it through the old lens, you'd say, well, these guys paid to get on the air. We shouldn't be giving them a big rights fee. Well, if they're driving those sort of numbers, there's value there. So, and if you look at the makeup of the audience, you say, that's the audience we want. So, you know, there's real value there. So if you have to make room, then I think if you're making choices and investment choices, you know, soccer is hard on the heels of basketball in this country to become a top three or four sport.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the chronology of discussion should be here, like where this leads to. So I'm just going to throw a few things out. Where do you put golf and tennis? These are not new sports. These are world sports. Mm-hmm. Both have channels of their own that can carry a lot of their content. Mm-hmm. We're certainly more familiar probably with the Golf Network, the Golf Channel rather, which is now owned by NBC. Yeah. But Sportsnet was never really proactive in terms of golf or tennis. There was some on, but not a whole lot. If you were there now, would there be more?
Most definitely there'd be more tennis, in my opinion. When I was there, we did a deal for Davis Cup because about 6 years ago, Michael Downey said to me, you got to be watching out for these kids, Felix Ojeda-Siolim and Denis Shapovalov. Mm-hmm. Both second generation immigrants second generation new Canadians, right? And if you look at the people that are driving tennis in Canada, they tend to be children of new Canadians. So we did a deal around Davis Cup, and we followed Davis Cup for a long time. And it culminated the year after I left Sportsnet in Canada being in the finals of the Davis Cup. And now they were in the finals and won the ATP Cup. And I don't know, when I left, the Sportsnet got rid of that, the Davis Cup. I don't know even if the ATP Cup was broadcast in Canada because I was down here. So I was a believer in tennis 8 or 9 years ago. Now it helps that that's one of my sports. I play it. I'm passionate about it. But clearly, that's one of the sports that's been very highly impacted by new Canadians and their love of that sport. So the difficulty with tennis, though, and I used to talk to the ATP folks about this, it is very difficult to program because a match can be 60 minutes, it can be 3 hours, right? And one of the challenges of promoting it, especially in the tournaments in the ATP 1000s or ATP 500s, is you don't know if Dennis or Felix are going to be in the semifinals until Thursday or Friday. So tough to promote against that, and even tougher when the organizers won't tell you until late Thursday night that Felix is playing in the early match on Friday or the late match on Friday. So it's difficult to schedule, but there is a full channel of called the Tennis Channel that doesn't get carried in Canada. So that's now on the cable companies to say, hey, we should be carrying the Tennis Channel because tennis is really important in Canada. But the gatekeepers of the cable companies, they're A, not adding channels very often because they're all saying that their business is dying, which I believe is wrong, but they're not adding channels. And B, Bell and Rogers both own sports channels, so they're not really keen on putting other sports channels on their system. Right. But you know, there's a full soccer channel in Canada called One Soccer. That's not getting carried anywhere but TELUS. And though that's where the women's qualifying, World Cup qualifying will be in the summer, it won't be on Sportsnet. It'll be on One Soccer. And will Rogers and Bell step up and carry it because soccer is important? Well, that remains to be seen. So go ahead, John.
Well, no, your discussion about tennis, I understand it. I mean, you know, but the bigger concern and the bigger thought for me is growth has to occur at grassroots levels too. Growth on television too has to occur at grass levels. And at what point and at what threshold do you say, okay, we're going to get 80,000 people to watch this event, whatever sport it is, and we can justify that? Because when you ran Sportsnet and others ran other channels, and you know, there is a requirement to try to earn money.
Yep.
To turn a profit. So what's when you say we wanted to do tennis, but what's the threshold? Do you need 150,000 viewers, or does it matter at this point how many viewers you have?
Well, I think you have to have enough viewers and enough interest and enough subscribers that are interested in that sport. But it is a chicken and egg. If you don't expose the sport to a broad number of viewers, then it's not going to become more popular. So, you know, I think it's incumbent. And when I was at Sportsnet, when others were at TSN and CBC, we've all tried various times to grow these sports. When I first came into Sportsnet, we put cricket on the air because we thought that was a perfect sport for this new evolving demographic. It didn't work that well for us for a couple of reasons. Number one is we found out that cricket is the most pirated content in the world, and that instead of subscribing to Sportsnet as part of your cable package, you could go to the local drugstore and get a $10 box that gives you every possible cricket channel illegally, but you're able to get it. So that didn't work as well for us. But soccer, for sure, I believe can make money. And I think you also have to look at it as an investment over the long term. There's this new professional soccer league in Canada, the Canadian Premier League, which has eight franchises now. We'll have 12 franchises in the next 3 years. That's where the next Alphonso Davies is going to come from. That's where the next Jonathan David is going to come from. And if you look at that over as an investment over 3, 5, 7, 10 years, but unfortunately, investment horizons tend to be quarterly these days, as opposed to over the course of 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
People are doing their latest estimates monthly now. They're not doing them every 6 months or every year, saying, okay, where's our, I mean, the profit and the churn are things that people have to, that's really what tweaked me to when you sent it out, because it's really an honorable thing to say, but how practical is it? How practical is it? And that becomes the question.
I think it's very practical if you take the long-term view. And I'll go back and use the Raptors example. 2007, I did a deal at CBC when I was head of CBC Sports for the Raptors for zero rights dollars, as I said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those games got on Sunday afternoons. They got promoted on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday nights. And I'm not at all suggesting that that promotion was in any way, shape, or form the reason why the Raptors have taken off, but it got them in front of a larger audience than they had been. And now combine a larger audience with great management at the Raptors, with success on the court, and the most diverse fan base in Canada, maybe in North America. And now you've got Raptors games that, John, you and I remember when they were drawing 20, 30,000 viewers on Sportsnet or on Raptors TV. Now they're 500,000 viewers in the playoffs, 3-4 million viewers. That it takes time. You can't flick a switch and say, hey, soccer is going to be popular and we're going to get 100,000 viewers for every CPL match tomorrow. But if you look at it over time, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, it's a good investment.
As an anecdote, I remember sitting and looking at the ratings for a certain game, maybe a couple of games, and there were more people in the arena that watched on television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we there were 17,000 people at then Air Canada Centre, and 12,800 watched on television.
So here are two stories, right? You got the Raptors that had that challenge, and you had the Grizzlies that had that challenge. The Raptors were fortunate. They were part of a large organization that could look at it as a long-term investment. The Grizzlies decided it wasn't going to work, and they left town. How valuable would the Vancouver Grizzlies be today if they had stuck it out? Don't know, but I'm guessing they'd be a lot more valuable than they thought they were going to be, and they probably would have been more valuable than they are living in Memphis.
I was going to say they would probably be intrinsically more valuable than the Memphis Grizzlies are. I agree.
Well, let me throw something anecdotal out here. I don't know whether you two guys will agree with this, but we all were on the floor in the building at Sportsnet together for many years while this evolution of basketball was taking place. We were in an environment where hockey was the sport. It was the sport for the network, as evidenced by the fact that you and your idiot friend Pelly convinced management ownership to spend $5 billion on it. And John, of course, is a hockey puck who I have to fight with every day. I, on the other hand, am more a basketball fan than a hockey fan and always have been. There was a cultural thing. Basketball not only had to find an audience, it had to find allies. And hockey people were not allies for basketball because they viewed it as competition.
Yeah, that's right.
It was a direct competitor in the season that hockey operates. And so as a basketball guy, I mean, I don't know about you more, but you were at the top of the food chain, you know, so you didn't probably succumb to this. There were hockey people who wouldn't talk to me. They were mad at me because I like basketball more than hockey. They were defensive about hockey and would talk about it all the time. So basketball had to fight that too. Like, unlike baseball, when baseball came in, what was the competition for baseball? The CFL? You know, probably nothing. And I'm wondering whether you were aware of this sitting in your corner office. And I should also tell the story that Moore, when he took that office, the first thing he said was, it's too big. I'm going to make it smaller. I got news for you, folks. He never did.
It's true.
Not a square inch. Anyway, I mean, to the point at hand, did you realize that there was a cultural conflict within the building?
Oh, for sure. For sure there was. And basketball did have to fight to get more airtime, to get more recognition. We did not early on invest enough in the production around basketball. Right. I think about 2013, 14, we started adding more and more people, you know, doing pregame shows, all the things that hockey always had. And I think you're right to say that certain groups thought the NBA was competitive to the NHL. And in some ways it is. But if you look at broadening the tent for sports in general, then embracing both, as MLSE has done, is going to grow your business and grow your audience overall. And the cross-fertilization, the cross-promotion that, hey, when you have a big hockey game and you can promote a basketball game off of it, and vice versa now, you have a big Raptors game and you can promote a hockey game off of it, you're going to eventually get some basketball people going, I think I'll tune in and see Connor McDavid tomorrow night because there's a lot of buzz around him. And you might get some hardcore hockey fans saying, you know, I can also be a basketball fan. So looking at broadening the tent, and I think that's where, and you're right, John, it's easy for me to sit here in Palm Springs not having the financial responsibility of running a network anymore. But when you look at the macro trends in Canada, you're crazy if you don't embrace the fact that this country has changed significantly, that sports fans have a totally different makeup than they did when you and I were first in the business in the early 80s, and that you should be investing in basketball. You should be investing in soccer. You might want to invest in cricket. You might want to invest in some of these other sports that are going to broaden your tent.
We got to take a quick break. Scott Moore is with us, the president of Uninterrupted Canada. And we'll continue the conversation after these messages. It's McCowan. It's Shannon. Scott Moore is our guest today. We're thrilled to have him from Palm Springs, California. There is a golf course behind us. You were regaling us of stories and bragging about who you played golf with the other day. And of course, we're jealous. But I mentioned golf and tennis, and you jumped on tennis. I wanted to bring you back. You didn't take golf. And I'm wondering whether that's because you feel like that is a closed shop in terms of the Golf Channel, which carries everything, now owned by NBC, and the major networks in the U.S. who carry virtually every tournament. Well, I think every tournament, Saturday and Sunday. Is that why, or is there still room for more golf?
No, I didn't jump on golf because golf made a strategic decision in the late 90s, early 2000s, to put all their broadcast rights into the U.S. and give them the Canadian territory. And there's very little you can do about it in Canada because John and I both worked on producing the Canadian Open and the Canadian Women's Open, the Canadian Seniors Open for years at CTV. But the golf tours, to their discredit, decided that they were going to give Golf Channel the North American rights for all these things, which shut out the Canadian broadcasters from doing Canadian versions of their own golf events, which I think is a woeful shame. We're the only territory probably in the world that doesn't produce our own national open. And so the Mike Weirs of the world and all the great young golfers are not getting showcased. The great young Canadian golfers are not getting showcased on Canadian broadcasts because Canadian broadcasters have been shut out of producing, which is, by the way, golf is incredibly expensive to produce.
I was going
to
say, that's one of the that's almost a bigger reason. You can do a tennis match with three cameras. If you do a golf match with three cameras, what are you going to do on the other 17 holes?
But it's different. It's different when you when you're producing a domestic championship As a Canadian broadcaster. I was the executive producer of the Air Canada Championship in Vancouver.
In BC,
yeah. The year that, yep. And I remember this like it was yesterday. Mike Weir on the 15th hole, holed out from the fairway with an eagle to jump up the leaderboard, and all the Canadians in the production truck cheered. Now, you don't normally get that in a golf event, but unfortunately, the runway for Canadian producers and broadcasters to do much with golf is not there because the governing bodies decided we're going to treat North America as one market, which I think is usually a mistake when that's done.
Well, our mutual friend Keith Pelley was the president of Rogers Media at the time. And of course, we all work together. Keith is now runs the European tour. He told me in some conversation, we had so many of them, that he was trying to get the broadcast rights for the Canadian Open. I assume you had some involvement in that. Was that stymied by this Golf Channel owns owns North America thing?
Yes.
Or was there, it was, huh?
100%. Just couldn't get it. And by the way, I think Golf Canada, I don't know that you'd have to ask Lawrence Applebaum if he agrees, but I don't know that it's been good for them because they can't get as much in the way of sponsorship because they're not controlling their own broadcast. In the old days, the RCGA, as it was called then, controlled the broadcast and were able to sell sponsorship that included the broadcast. They're not able to do that now. By the way, it never fails that when I'm doing something important, the grass is being cut outside, and you'll notice it's not me cutting the grass.
It's okay. We don't hear it. It's okay here. It may be loud for you, but we're fine with it. Well, look at, you know, and I mean, CBS has done the Canadian Open for a number of years, and it's how I got to meet Jim Nance, and he and I have become friends. So there's some personal advantages to it. And look, at CBS does a high-quality broadcast. But you're right. I mean, I would think that RBC, as the sponsor who pays, I'm guessing, $10, $12 million a year for those rights, as much as they like the coverage that they get on CBS, if Sportsnet was carrying the Canadian Open, RBC's exposure would be many times what they get on CBS. Wouldn't you agree?
It most definitely would be. Now, the cost of the broadcast would go up, and there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that most of your listeners don't know or probably don't care about. But in the old days, we used to do what was called a side-by-side. You know, ESPN was doing the broadcast and CTV would do the broadcast because ESPN didn't want to take the CTV broadcast because they thought, oh, Canadians can't do golf. So we ended up where the costs would almost double to do the broadcast. So I understand why the golf rights holders did what they did, but I do think it took it took the Canadiana out of golf, and it suffers from a little bit of the same problem that the NFL does. And that may sound strange, but I'll explain it, that there's only American broadcasts of the NFL available in Canada. So Chase Claypool doesn't get showcased as a Canadian because he's just another great football player. If it was a Canadian broadcast, Chase Claypool would become even more of a star here. Same can be true for Brooke Henderson on the LPGA. When she comes to play in the LPGA in Canada, if it was a Canadian broadcast, she'd be the star of the show by far, right?
Oh, sure.
So there are challenges when you don't get to produce and tell your own native stories. But the golf one is an interesting one because there's so many financial implications. Right. It's $500,000 to $750,000 to broadcast or produce a golf tournament in Canada. So it's a lot more expensive than producing a soccer game or a basketball game.
Well, put it in comparison. Like, what does a hockey game cost? By comparison, that half to $750,000.
But you could do five or six hockey games. You could do five or six hockey games for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that to me, golf's a little bit different than I think what we're talking about, because the issue with golf is it's still an exclusive sport. Yeah. It's still viewed as an exclusive sport. That's not where, in my opinion, that's not where the growth is going to be. But that's the question. Where is the growth going to be? We've touched on soccer. Yeah. Is it as simple as soccer? Scott believes a little bit in cricket, although I don't know. I've always wondered how you cover a cricket match. I mean, you talked about you don't know when the tennis game is going to end.
Yeah.
I mean, cricket, you know, goes on cricket
for weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say cricket match may end next month.
But so
I think
where,
one started so, out here last month.
It's funny. There's a controversy going on in Ontario right now where the OUA is saying why is the government really picking on us and saying we're not an exclusive sport, an elite sport? Why isn't there more long-term coverage of, for the sake of argument, and I know where you are going, Scott, with CIS or U Sport, or why aren't we doing more with all of the other aspects of participation sports, particularly, I mean, the CBC does a little bit more, but why isn't there a place for that? And should there be a place for that on TSN and Sportsnet?
So let me take the first part of the question, because university college sports in Canada is a whole conundrum that many people have tried to solve. But where's the growth in Canadian sport in the next 10 years? In my estimation, that answer is incredibly simple. Soccer.
Yeah.
Look at the demographics of the country. Look at the superstars that are emerging in that sport and have emerged over the last few years. On the women's side, Christine Sinclair, the greatest goal scorer in the history of FIFA. Steph Labbe, the keeper. On the men's side, Jonathan David, Alphonso Davies. You build sports in any territory or country based on stars and superstars. And we have legitimate stars and superstars in that sport. We are now it sounds odd to say, but I'm going to say it. We're a world power in soccer. You can't define it any other way when you're the reigning Olympic gold medalists on the women's side, and you're going to be part of a very, very exclusive club of countries that will be in the next two men's World Cups in 22 and 26. So if I were going to put my money somewhere, I would put it on soccer. Now, okay, I'm happy to talk about university sports, but that gets into a whole other subject.
All right, so let's get specific, though. Correct me if I'm wrong. The rights to TFC are owned by TSN, correct?
They are. Okay. Yes, they are.
Yeah. The MLS. They own the MLS rights in Canada.
Right, okay.
Because it's Vancouver and Montreal as well.
These qualifying games for Qatar are owned by Sportsnet. Correct?
No, they're owned by One Soccer, which is a network that carries all of Canadian soccer, including Canadian Premier League. They own the rights to the men's and women's national teams. They did a deal with Sportsnet to put those games on Sportsnet for this qualifying session. The women's qualifying sessions, which will be later this summer, will be exclusively on One Soccer. And they're in a position where they're trying to get cable companies to carry their channel.
All right. So where does this go from a television perspective, from a viewership perspective? If we buy into your theory, and I'm not being critical, I think you may be right. If you're running one of the networks, what are you trying to do? Where can you go? What product can you put on the air now with that you would say is a good investment?
Well, certainly the World Cup is a good investment, and TSN, Sportsnet, previously CBC, previously have invested in that. But if I were with one of those two organizations now, I would try and find a way to get more Canadian soccer. And you know, there are always deals that can be done to get more soccer on whether it's on their channels or on their cable systems.
So one of the things that Sportsnet used to have was they used to have Premier League games. And that disappeared because of DAZN, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, DAZN bid a ton of money to steal away Premier League from TSN and Sportsnet. And those rights have now gone to, as of last night, went to a group called Fubo, which is an over-the-top system that you can now buy into in Canada. You can buy Fubo, and it has soccer channels. It has a bunch of other channels. That's an investment that they think is going to pay off with more subscribers in Canada. And what's interesting, if you get into the business side of it, is can you make a real business with just a straight direct-to-consumer over-the-top offering at $9.99 or $15.95, whatever they're going to charge, as opposed to being in broad distribution on the cable channels? And it's a chicken and egg, as we talked about before. You want to have a certain number of your games, if not a majority of your games, on a broadly distributed channel, so you get the casual fan as opposed to just the hardcore fan. So, you know, I would think if you talk to the folks at the English Premier League, and I used to negotiate with them all the time, they have to balance the fact that they want Chelsea and Liverpool and others playing on a broadly distributed channel where they're getting a big audience. But they have to balance that with the fact that a Fubo or a DAZN puts more money on the table to have it on a more niche service. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've got that balance quite right yet. And you know, the leagues have to figure out whether they go for the easy, quick money or whether they continue to invest long term but keep the audiences high. So it's a tough one.
Is this where our market size really does create obstacles? Because let's face it, in the world of the Premier League, in the world of a European soccer, we're a drop in the bucket. We're a drop in the bucket, and you said early on in our conversation that that you still believe in the cable world. I think I'm paraphrasing, but you think cable it's not dwindling as quickly as people thought it would in our country.
It's not dwindling as much as the media people like to say that it's a dying breed. It's not dying. There are a lot of people that have cut their cable, but here's what I predict in the next 5-10 years. There's going to have to be a swap in the system somewhere, because hey, if I get rid of my Comcast cable down here and I want to watch Netflix and Prime and Peacock and all the others, now by the time I've subscribed to all of those, my bill is way more than my cable bill would have been. The same is going to happen in sports, that if it becomes you just have to subscribe to Fubo and OneSoccer and DAZN and all these other services, there you're going to find that your bill is going to go from here to here. Now you have more choice. You might decide, well, I'm not going to spend my money on this channel because I don't care about that sport. But there's going to have to be what I call a reaggregation. And interestingly, that's Fubo's idea, that they're going to bring all the sports services onto Fubo, and there now you can subscribe to Fubo and hopefully get everything you want. But there's a lot of stuff that has to happen in the interim. So I think you're going to see something like a cable system again, where you subscribe and get a broad package. And you know, the cable companies are trying to figure that out to decide what's going to work for them. But I was talking to an old colleague from Rogers back when, you know, Ted was alive and cable was the main driver of that company as opposed to wireless. The philosophy was, if there's a channel out there, it should be on Rogers, so that if you want Rye, if you want BN, if you want Sportsnet, if you want TSN, if you want One Soccer, if you want DAZN, it's going to be on Rogers cable. Now, they're looking at it from a cost standpoint and saying, well, we can't afford all these channels. Well, that may exasperate the cord cutting if people can't get the men's national soccer team's games leading up to the World Cup. They may go, well, if I can't get it on my cable system, then I'm just going to go and subscribe to One Soccer over the top, and I'm going to get Fubo so I can watch my Premier League game. So I think that reaggregation, mark my word on that one, because you'll hear that word a lot over the next 5 years. Reaggregation is going to be important.
We could sit and chat all day, but then again, we're media junkies. We've been in this business our entire lives. But let me throw this on, and I literally have 2 minutes, but I'm intrigued by your response to this. How serious a threat to television in general, as we know it, whether it's terrestrial or cable television, whatever, are services like Netflix and Amazon Prime and the others that have come into being? It seems to me that when I talk to people, the focus of conversation almost invariably is what they saw on one of those channels, as opposed to what they're seeing over the air. Are we in the midst of a dramatic change, or has that change already taken place?
Yeah, it's, as Nadir said, takes a long time to happen, and then it happens suddenly. It's happening suddenly, that it's not, I don't even think we should be using the word television anymore. It's video viewing.
Media. Sure, fair enough.
And I'll tell you what an incredible visionary Ted Rogers was. I can remember him saying at a town hall in 2000 when they bought Sportsnet. He said, and Ted was not a big sports fan. He just knew
that. Wasn't a sports fan really at all. Yeah.
But he said, sports is going to be live. Everything else is going to be on demand. He said that in 2000, 21 wow. years ago. He was 100% right. You know, there's very few things that I watch live on television anymore.
Me
there's
too.
The news, my wife loves The Voice, and sports. Those are the three things we watch live. Everything else is on demand. So the cable companies, the media companies have to look at entertainment is almost exclusively going to be on demand. How do you solve for that? Well, Disney's done it. Peacock's done it. Netflix has done it. So how do you do it in every territory? So yeah, Nadir was a really bright man. Ted was a visionary. Change takes a long time, and then it happens suddenly.
What the next step in that is those places like Bob talked about, Netflix, Prime, all of these other, in my house that are apps, is when they decide they want to get into sports.
Yeah, and the one that should worry the regular broadcasters is Prime, because yeah. Prime doesn't worry so much about a profit and loss on their video service. Because to them, it's a way of getting you to become an Amazon Prime member to buy stuff and have it delivered to your house. So it's a different world.
Yeah, and I got a delivery yesterday. I got news for you. Moritz, delightful to see you. We hope we see you in person now that we are, as we were discussing earlier, relatively geographically close neighbors.
Well, everybody's moving to the best part of the city. That's all I know. So
Bobby's on Lakeshore for breakfast when I get back in April.
You betcha. Let us know. Meanwhile, right. put a hat on. All right.
Oh, geez, it's getting sunny here.
See you guys. Thanks, pal. Scott Moore. We'll come back after these messages. Well, that was enjoyable. That was nice to see Mr. Moore again. I wasn't always able to say that. There were times when I hated seeing him, but now I like him.
Yeah, but in the old days on the radio show, he would stick his nose into the studio, it was a very subconsciously a hint that he could go on the air anytime with you. he loved doing the drop in. He loved doing the drop in.
Well, more than Pelly did, and we mentioned
Pelly was in the other building. No, Moore's gargantuan office.
No, Pelly would come in when we asked him. Yeah. Moore would come in just because he wanted to.
Every day.
Well, not quite. Let's not get carried away. In any event, are you buying any of this?
I'm buying soccer because I think.
But where do you go?
That's not very much different than what we're doing now. And we are seeing a shift. The problem becomes is there's a whole level of sports below the elite sports. There's a whole level of sports that's saying, hey, how about us? What about me? And that's where the issue is. I mean, a really good example in many ways, and we couldn't get to it, was junior hockey in Canada. The World Juniors are up here, but World Juniors are a special thing. But junior hockey in Canada, where there are more than 50 junior teams in our country, are had a deal with Sportsnet to grow the game. It was a 12-year deal that actually they got out of it early.
Regularly scheduled games. Well, it was drawing flies.
It wasn't working, helping the game and creating interest in the game. They've now done a deal with TSN that's a partnership, a time buy, more so like what Scott was talking about with the Raptors in the early 2000s, because there's not enough money available to generate in a rights fee, and there's not enough people watching. If we got 100,000 people watching a junior game between London and Kitchener across the country, that was a bonus, Bob. That doesn't happen anymore. And that's the problem is that there's a whole layer of sports in our country that just don't have a place to be visible on television because not enough people will watch. Not enough. And at that point, you have to look at your business partners and say, we ought to have, put on another basketball game, another baseball game, another soccer game, another hockey game.
Well, I'm sure you have similar stories, but I can't remember how many times I get personal calls from somebody in some sport who says, Scott Moore won't return my call. Keith Pelly won't return my call. I want to, my sport is the next great sport. How do I get it on television? And the answer is you don't.
Unless you go and buy the time. You don't have the money to buy the time.
No.
And they don't have the money to pay you. So it's
and they're not going to spend the money to produce it because as we discovered the production costs or people have discovered production costs, even if you pay nothing for the rights, you can lose your
production
shirt
costs just can on be
what
heavy.
It costs to put it on the air, right?
Yep. Just like this show.
Oh, it's nothing like this show. we gotta get out of here. Time is our enemy. For John Shannon, Bob McCown. We'll see you tomorrow. We hope. Goodbye, everybody.